Access number 31467, Mr. Tom Handley, Reel 6. Now, what about, did you remember Squadron Leader Baker, what he was like?
Yes.
What was he like? Give us a bit of a picture of him.
Well, he's a strict disciplinarian. He wanted you to fly the way he wanted you to fly. He flew the way he wanted you to fly. He set, led by example, in other words. And
he flew then?
Oh, yes.
And what was he like?
What was he like? He was a... Oh, just an ordinary guy, but he got 2.5 rings on his sleeves. That meant that he was a squadron leader. And the only distinction I can claim is that when they said that you're going to be re-equipped with Typhoons, right, we'll have a squadron Balbo, as they called it. A squadron Balbo is a sort of a big fly, big formation. How many aircraft have we got? We had 12 aircraft then in the whole squadron. So 12 aircraft took off in twos.
Which aircraft, though? The new one or the old one?
The new one. The old one. The Whirlwind. Our last trip together. And I was number two to him. I remember that. It was a position I hated.
Because you didn't like close formation work?
No, I didn't like close formation flying. But nevertheless, we were going up on our last trip in the Whirlwind. So that we did, and we formed up in fours. 1, 2, 3, 4. One in the box, as they call it. Who was actually flying lower than the others. But when they get together... and they used to fly around Weymouth and Dorchester and do a low-level sweep and climb up again. And we all tried very hard to keep our positions. And then he goes us up to about 10,000 feet. And he says, well, that's it. He says, I'm going home. You please yourself when you go home. So he then pushed his aircraft into quite a steep dive. And I held on to my position. And everybody else hung on. And he suddenly found himself in the circuit with 12 roaring whirlwinds round him, and he didn't realise that we could do such a thing to start with, and he was very pleased about that. And I actually landed in formation with him that day, which was quite something. And everybody else landed in pairs.
Now, before we leave, what about your social life? Can we talk about what were the drinking? People always talk about RAF pilots and drinking and the rest of it. What was there much drinking in either the sergeant's mess or in the pubs?
Oh, yes, there was a considerable amount. It depended a lot on the supplies. You could have a drink any time you like in the mess. But it depended on what they'd got. But we didn't drink spirits very much. Mostly beer. And later on, cider.
And would you drink it just... how much would you drink? Was it enough to get you drunk and hungover? Or would you drink
a bit woozy. But not drunk.
Would you drink before a flight? The night before, obviously. I don't mean, you know.
No, I mean, if we went out last night, you'd be fit to fly today, now. But you sometimes you it depended what you were drinking. Sorry, it depended what you were drinking. But most of the time it was, well, wartime beer. I don't know what its alcoholic level was, but it's not very big, not very much. You'd have to drink an awful lot.
Before your first operational flights and then after, were you nervous at all? How, you know, because people do get nervous. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
Well,
How were you?
A bit nervous to start with. I was a bit nervous because I think, well, this is it. This is the first time. And of course, after that, we were very blasé. It's cocky, really.
You stopped worrying.
Yes.
Did you start again later on? Oh, well, we'll come to that, because that's when you were in the typhoon, so, you know.
Yes.
But, so after the first few flights, it didn't bother you at all?
No. No, you knew you had to do it to stay there.
Now, what would you wear? What would you say, flying kit in the whirlwind? It's probably the same as a typhoon, but just go through what your flying kit was.
Your flying kit was largely your battle dress. Battle dress and ordinary trousers, a helmet with goggles, and we wore chamois leather gloves, better grip, lightweight. We had two other pairs of gloves which I only put on for experimental purposes.
I think you mentioned that. Now, what about in your helmet? Was there oxygen and wireless?
Oxygen was piped in, and the radio was there. Yes, microphone built in into the mouthpiece.
And well, who was that connected with? The rest of your flight, or
you were connected to the other flight, and to the ground station as far as it could reach.
Was there a procedure about wireless? You know, a method of doing it, or when you did and didn't speak? I presume you didn't chatter into it.
Oh, no, we didn't chat, because that would assist the enemy in locating the position of the squadron.
What was the
Everybody had a number and a password, not a password.
A call sign,
that's right. Like Bimbo 23, but it would be Bimbo. It had to be a two-syllable thing.
And B for B-flight, Bimbo.
Might have been.
Oh, no, so that was just a coincidence, right?
That was just a coincidence. I knew of a chap who, when we were, don't know where we were, anyway, his number was Actro 33 was his number, and he had the misfortune to land and his undercarriage gave way, and he finished short, and it threw him forward, and he crashed into the gun sight, which was just in front of you there.
That
and it knocked his two front teeth out. And you try saying Actro 33 with those teeth in.
So you had call signs. Was there any other verbal procedure, you know, of how you'd say or method of saying it?
No.
Formalised language, in other words.
Well, usually it was you'd say it in as brief a form as possible, from what I remember.
And what did you call them, bandits or whatever? I mean, I don't know what phraseology you'd use, but was there a set phraseology for, say, enemy fighters, enemy bombers,
yeah,
whatever, submarine, whatever you'd seen?
You'd talk about ships as ships, a submarine or destroyer over there or something like that. But we saw so little of the enemy in the air, we didn't have any special procedure for it.
So the next thing is the move to Ibsley, and this is where you switch from Whirlwind to the Typhoon 1B, it looks like.
That's right.
Now, tell me about the move to Ibsley. Anything special about that? You're still in B flight, 263 Squadron. You
yeah.
go to Ibsley. Why were you moving there? Or, I mean, was it just a normal mood?
I don't remember Ibsley particularly. The next place I remember was Zeals. Z-E-A-L-S.
That seems to be quite a bit late.
Is it? What do we do at Ibley then?
Now we just looked at the thing. You're at Zeals. So that must be in the same area. And then Warmwell, backwards and forwards a bit, and then leave them in December to go to Ibsley, and that's when you get the.
We got the typhoons at Zeals. Because it was a concrete runway there.
Now we just decided. I mean, it's Warmwell, then Zeals, then Warmwell, and then Ibsley. Now, trick of the memory, you don't remember Ibsley, but you do remember your first flights in
the typhoon.
So I think we'll just go on to that. You know, as opposed to worrying about where it was, because what was a typhoon? What were your first flights in a typhoon like then?
Frightening.
What was the aircraft like?
It had a very, very large engine. Very powerful. It was called an H-24. Like a V-6. It had four banks of six cylinders, forming an H. Sleep valve engine, delivering a lot of power to the 11-foot prop. That's something to remember, 11-foot prop. Whereas the propeller, when you saw some people the other day, they were on an aircraft, and as you passed, you walked past the front of the aircraft, he said, "Give us a swing." So you just went back to it, you got hold of the prop, and you brought it round to there, and then you just did that and walked away. Well, you could not do that to a typhoon.
They can't see him, so.
No, I'm no.
So, what was it like to fly then? Give us some idea.
Once you got off the ground, it pulled tremendously to the right.
Why?
Because the torque from the engine. And you could always tell the new flyers to the typhoon, because the sergeant's mess was opposite the end of the runway. The officer's mess was way off to the right. And if you found yourself flying over the officer's mess, you had to counter this drag to the right in your own particular way. You were trying all the time to keep that stopping from going round there. Of course, you mastered it in the end, so that I mastered it by dipping my left wing just a tiny bit. And then as you gather speed, which you did rather quickly in a typhoon.
It was much faster than the whirlwind then.
Oh, yes. Cruising speed in the whirlwind was 250 or something like that. Cruising speed, and the same idea in the typhoon, was 100 miles an hour faster than that.
Now, so you're up there training in Ibsley, which you don't remember, so that's fair enough. But I mean, you know,
I didn't know it was called Ibsley.
It's just and then you seem to go to Bewley. Well, it says Fairwood Green for a month, but
Fairwood Common.
Fairwood Common, yeah.
Fairwood Common, that's a gunnery school.
Right. What were you doing there?
Gunnery.
What do you remember? What? Just practicing your gunnery?
Yes. Do air to ground and air to air.
Well, what was the gunnery like? What was the power of the typhoon then?
The power is 2,200 horsepower.
No, the gunnery. I mean, what armament?
Oh, it had four 20mm cannons built in. And because they were built in on a very good gun platform, you should be able to get quite accurate. I remember one gunnery school I went to. Do you know how guns are marked? How do you know it's your hole that bullet made? You know, well, for practice purposes, when the cartridges were loaded, they were smeared with paint so that when the bullet went through, it left a trace. And that's how it was done. So, of course, if you happen to get it right, as I did once or twice, drove shot to pieces with all I got on my gunnery form that day, and of course, a sleeve is a very tough bit of material. Shot it pieces, so you got that. You actually got no score, but you got no score for the best reason. You shot the drogue to pieces, you see.
Were you a good shot, do you think?
Fair, yes. I got quite a number of those. Drogue shot to pieces.
Would you have to hit it a fair number of times, it's fair to say, to destroy a drogue?
It's probably because it was at just the right distance from it, and that get a concentration of both guns. They only have had two guns each when you were practice firing, two inboard guns, and
they're 20 millimeter cannons.
20 millimeter cannons, very accurate on the. For attacking on the ground.
And no rockets?
Not at that time.
Right. So the final common thing, and then you go to Bewley. Now, what was the setup at Bewley? You do remember Bewley, I think. You seem to go there in February, 44.
Oh, yes.
What do you remember of Bewley Airfield?
I think it was a grass roam. Which means you had to stick to the designated areas. And not taxi up just where you felt like it. You had to stick otherwise you get stuck in the mud. And in that case you wouldn't be very popular with the ground crew.
Were the others concrete mainly or
concrete, yes. Proper runways.
Were there problems then in grass airfields, or would you? Were there any advantages to having grass as opposed to concrete, or was it just?
Well, I don't. At the time, you thought it might be a bit softer, but I mean, to hit the ground at 80 miles an hour and to hit the ground at nearly 180 miles an hour, not much difference.
Now, what were you doing at Bewley? Just.
Familiarising yourself with all that you've got.
Now, there seem to go on to a couple of things we haven't mentioned. A bullseye exercise. What's a bullseye exercise?
You tell me. I don't know.
It is 70 years ago. I mean, it's difficult to remember. So there's a couple of bullseye exercises. Fighter sweeps and scramble. Tell us about a scramble. What is a scramble? I mean, I know, but can you just explain how you did it?
You would be sitting in the aircraft, engine stopped at the end of the runway, looking towards the control tower. If the control tower fired a double green, you took off without ceremony and then be in contact with the radio, they tell you what to do. So you did it.
Now, you seem to have been on various sweeps and patrols off Portland and Needles and the rest of it. Do you remember these patrols? What were the patrols like?
Patrol was just... sweeps. We used to do sweeps a lot, looking for any activity from the Germans. Because we had to do the same sort of thing on our ground. If an aeroplane had something wrong with it, it had to be repaired and it had to be test flown before it was allowed back into the squadron. And the Germans had to do the same thing. So we spent quite a lot of time doing that, looking for them. If they were unfortunate enough to get in our way, I'm afraid we shot them down.
And did you have much contact in these sweeps and patrols?
Contact?
With the enemy, with the Germans?
No. Once or twice there were.
Seems to have suffered a fair number of casualties. Flight Sergeant Williams shot down in flames. Pilot Officer Watkins bailed out.
That's him.
Couple of others missing.
Well, it was my sense of morbidity, I suppose. I've got another little book here with all the names of the pilots. And what happened to them when it was continued after I left.
I mean, how did you react to casualties? I mean, was it, there had been a tradition in previous years of almost ignoring them, but I mean, how did...
You had to ignore them. You couldn't say, oh dear, and start worrying about it. That would really, you upset yourself so that you weren't in a fit state to fly. And if you heard that somebody had been shot down, you say, oh, I hope he got out all right, and things like that.
Were you in any action that you remember in that period at Bewley? That sort of February 44 through into... Then you go to Harrowbeer. Now, I don't know where Harrowbeer is.
That's in South Devon. Yes, I remember Harrowbeer was an adventurous place.
Well, tell us what you remember of that time. That's you go there in March.
Eventually, I got onto the ground. It had a humped runway. Slight hump. And if you had to touch down before you reached the hump, whichever way you were going. And if you didn't make the hump, then you floated off the end of the runway, generally with catastrophic consequences. And it took me, I think, three attempts. I don't think they got the wind right in the first... at least that's my excuse. I came into land, and I'd obviously missed the hump. So, full throttle, go round again. I did that again. And then I was told, try the other way. So I'd turn right round in the air, and... approach from a different direction, and that time I got it right and landed as you're supposed to land in the first third of the runway.
Why they couldn't flatten this hump then?
No, they hadn't. No, it was it's still there.
Is it concrete or?
Oh, it was a runway. Yes,
a proper concrete runway with a hump in it.
Yes, it was a hump. It doesn't look that you think, well, it's no different. But, you know, from the ground it looks different. It looks as though, what's all the fuss about?
Now, you say you had an adventurous time there. I mean, you start early on with a scramble, and it's this found fortress, flying fortress, I presume.
Oh, yes.
Do you remember that incident? That's
very clearly.
2nd of March. Tell us about that.
I got off the ground with my flaps fully down, which was the wrong thing to do, because the plane sort of ballooned off the ground. Anyway, I eventually got to high enough, and I called up the controller, and he told me to go to Angels End for Nuts or something like that. And I looked on my card where it says 14,000 feet or something like that. I went to that, and he was surprised how quickly we got there. And then he corrected my direction by 3 degrees, I remember, which was very little. And I turned on the gun sight and turned on the firing button, so everything was set to shoot down the enemy. But when we got there, it wasn't the enemy, it was the American. But we kept well out of his way, because we knew what Americans, how trigger happy they are. They fly it, and they couldn't tell the difference between us and the Focke-Wulf 190s. And so they had guns, machine guns, which had a 600 yards maximum range. So that was the minimum distance we stayed off, because our cannons had a maximum range of 1,000 yards.
Now, actually, that incident, March 2nd, was actually while he was still at Bewley. I got that wrong. You moved to Harrowbeer on the 19th of March. So,
yeah,
but it's a story makes the same. And then you referred to something called a rodeo. It says nothing seen. What's a rodeo? Is that a slang for...
It's the name of a type of operation.
Now, what sort of operation is it?
There were rodeos. Oh, there's a rodeo 117, I remember. It's an organised sweep to a certain area. And it depends whether your track, which is as round the back of Paris, as we call it, going south of Paris.
They're over France, then?
Over France, yes. It's amazing that you can pick up the detail. That's why there's a picture of the... Oh, where's that place in Southsea? The wait a minute. I think we'd better stop.